Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to the Lanterne Rouge Cycling Podcast. Vierkakers for Stage 8 of the Tour de France. Yeah, I learn a new Dutch word every day, from Le Bon to Limoges. 200.7 kilometers in over 30-degree heat. We're smack bang in the middle of France. Not much wind, not much reprieve from that heat. And it's a hilly finish to this stage. It's not a straightforward sprint like in Bordeaux yesterday. The first 124Ks are no categorized climbs, and then it gets a bit punchy in the last 70Ks with a Cat 3, 3Ks 5%, and then rolling uncategorized climbs before two climbs back-to-back, 1,300 meters each at 5.4%, but steady. No pinch points in them really at all. Then again, a rolling sort of up and down until an uphill sprint, 700 meters at 4.3%, the final ramp to the finish in Limoges. Low altitude, as I said, hot, and but no crosswind action either. So I think a big opportunity, Benji, for the sprinters who've not been able to beat Philipsen in the pure bunch sprints.
Yeah, the more versatile sprinters as well, I would say, on this parkour, because that last half of the race, pretty tough. Some hills in there, some teams might want to spark something and make it a bit harder. But first of all, I would like to look at the breakaway phase, because if you look at a stage like this, put it in the Vuelta, and you've got a Magnuskort breakaway, right?
Yeah, probably.
Because Alpecin was controlling the breakaway formation phase completely, and respect to them, because in the past, like that UAE Tour where that Gazprom rider ended up winning, they've had days where, for example, they won a few stages, and then the next stage they would say, okay, I don't feel like doing it anymore because we've got our victories anymore, as an excuse to not pull, for example. And I respect that they're taking up that responsibility to pull every single time, because one, they probably know that getting every possible advantage for Philipsen is as much as they can is perfect. Yeah. And secondly, why not try and win a stage when you can win a stage?
Exactly. Three from three in the sprints, and it's not like the UAE Tour where they're, all right, well, I mean, we're on holiday in February. We've won a couple, you know, this is the Tour de France. Also, Intermarché would be very interested in a sprint like this for Binny. Trek was the really curious one to me, because yeah, I thought they would be 100% locked in, because this is a Pedersen finish, like grippy, a sort of hard last hour, but, you know, big ring climbs and an uphill long drag sprint. This is perfect for him, and dare I say, a Michael Matthews. And he was trying to get in the breakaway and not just following moves that were going, trying to shut down if, a quick step was jumping. He was initiating. So was Kish. And I was like, what? Why, when Alpecin will control with you and Intermarché and Cofidis for Lecoq, who I picked for this bait in the preview, and probably Jumbo too, because they're without a win in this first week, and this is a good Wout finish too. He'd be trying to get in the breakaway. It made no sense to me.
Let's say you see a situation, a breakaway formation phase, where you see Vanderpool going in the break, Wout van Aert going in the break on a stage like this, because they all feel like, oh, we've got a larger chance of winning from the breakaway than in the peloton or something, if they're delusional in that sense. Well, then it's a good idea to put Pedersen in there. But I feel like it was clear that Alpecin was going to control whatever happens, because they were continuously trying to close everybody down. So Pedersen, Kirsch from Trek, Kung from FDJ, for example, some Bora riders, Ineos with Turner and Quijato trying to get in the breakaway, EF riders trying to get up there. So all those riders getting control, and we get that simple breakaway, the three-man breakaway that we get if the breakaway phase is controlled, but yeah, with one special rider, El Tractor.
The Tractor. Is he Spanish now? The Tractor. What's Tractor in Dutch?
Tractor.
John Deere. anyway, he gets in the break. It's good he gets a bit of freedom. Obviously, Quickstep kind of don't know what they're doing. They don't really have a clear plan here in these stages. Yeah. They don't. It's because I don't think there's anything wrong with what they did. I'm saying mm-hmm. it's the right thing to get him in the breakaway. They probably yeah. would have hoped it would have been in break of six. But they don't, like, I think Merlier would have been good for this finish. I really do.
I don't think so.
I think Merlier is good on this sort of finish. In Oman, he won a grippy finish like this. And Fabio's obviously had the crash. They guys had an option yesterday, or I can't remember what happened. No, they went for Fabio yesterday. Yesterday it was a disaster again. They pulled, so I presume he was not bad from the crash. And then today they just didn't go for him at all. Even though some big boys made this finish in the end, despite it being quite difficult. So, and then it's like, oh, we'll go for Alaphilippe. But then it's like, well, if you want Alaphilippe to win this, you can't put a guy on the break. You actually need to launch all these little climbs and try and get a small group. But it's still not hard enough for him. We're talking 5% all these climbs and steady. So they're having a tough Tour de France so far, but it was nice to see de Klerk in the break.
It was very nice to see de Klerk in the break. And to give a bit of another angle on what you're saying, I think they're just desperate to find a way to win a stage at this point. And de Klerk being put in the breakaway is one way to try and hurt the riders that are controlling in the peloton in the same way that you mentioned a few stages ago. But also maybe there's a chance that the break makes it, a slight chance, you never know. But there's other things that happen in the stage that show that they're desperate to do something. I'll switch forward to that. We'll go back to the intermediate sprint afterwards. We got to move a bit later in the race towards the last 30 kilometers where Asgreen counterattacks from the peloton towards the breakaway. And it's a 1 minute and a half gap that he's trying to overcome, which it's unrealistic. Like, I gave this a 0.1% chance, probably 0.5% chance to work out. Like, imagine if you do that, you've got the Klerk in front, Asgreen bridging over then, might as well try and attack with Alaphilippe to Asgreen and then towards the Klerk if you're getting that started.
I don't really know what their plan was, to be honest. The Klerk wasn't happy. It was kind of something you would have expected Benji from, like, B&B, honestly, back in the day, where it's a chasse-patate that's going nowhere. They've told de Klerk to sit up when the gap to Asgreen is still a minute 20. Asgreen has 14 seconds on the peloton, which is riding full gas because they're coming into climbs where there could be splits. And Asgreen is going nowhere. They told de Klerk to stop. And he's like, I've been in the break all day. He's not getting across to me. And you're telling me to stop now working. That was probably, not great. I don't think de Klerk was very happy.
I don't think so either. And to go back now, intermediate sprint. We've got an intermediate sprint with some interesting action, actually, because we did not only see an intermediate sprint happening. We saw the likes of Alpecin on the left with a lead out, Bora on the right side. So Alpecin for Philipsen, obviously, and Bora for Jordi Meus. And the Van Poppel lead out was better at the intermediate sprint. Meus gets out of the wheel of Van Poppel, while Philipsen gets out of the wheel of his lead out. And it's not a big difference between the lead outs, but Philipsen needs to catch up with Meus. And I think Philipsen won that intermediate sprint in the bike trail.
Yeah, it looked like Meus and him were kind of going the same speed at the end, Ben. And I even thought Meus was going to win. But yeah, you're right. Philipsen's bike throw was way better. And then they kept going on with it. They had such a split in this intermediate sprint that there was like a breakaway of multiple Astana domestiques with Mark Cavendish. There was multiple Alpecin riders with Jasper Philipsen. And Binnie was in there too, and Lecoq. So the big team that missed out was basically, I don't know if Pedersen was in there or not. The big team that missed out was Jumbo-Visma, because Van Aert's not going for these intermediate sprints at all. And so now there's like multiple teams with strong rouleurs riding really, really hard. It's still 120Ks to go or something, 100Ks to go over that. And Jumbo-Visma had put Van Baal and Van Hooydonk on the front to ride and chase it down. And eventually Rickard and Philipsen just stop and Cav stops, and then Astana's domestiques are still riding on the group, which now just has MVDP and maybe Binnie. So it died after about 3 minutes, but it was
fun.
And it showed that Jumbo-Visma, who hadn't been pacing up to that point, were interested in the stage.
Yeah, exactly. And do you think that's something where from that point onwards, Alpecin realized, okay, if Jumbo wants to pace for the stage anyway, we might as well sit back and have Jumbo pace the entire final? Because I swear from that point onwards, we saw Jumbo pace more in the peloton than we saw Alpecin pace in the peloton.
After that point, Alpecin did put one. And then Cofidis and Intermarché put multiple riders. Then Trek put riders. And at that point, Alpecin's like, there's four teams. We no longer need to control a breakaway of three very tired riders. The gap came down to 2:30, especially when you enter the climbing phase where Trek put Juanpe on the front and Ciccone, and they did the climbs really hard. So they took the gap down on the climbs. That also made it, you know, a little bit more fatiguing for the other sprinters. So yeah, it was under control, and we see the gap go to 140, and that was when that Asgreen move happened. So we're going in. Now the question is, how many sprinters make it to this finish? Jakobsen won't make it. Quickstep decided that on the bus today. Is it going to be hard enough that MVDP actually goes for it? Because there was talk, and it actually sounded like MVDP did want to go for it. And Christoph Rudolph said, no, Jasper's our best chance to win this stage. I think that probably is correct, actually.
I agree.
The way this panned out in the end. And also, you want to bank those green jersey points. You can't be just giving away green jersey points if you want to win that, take that competition seriously. And so the next question was, who was going to take it up? And it was Jumbo-Visma who were, once we get into these two Category 4 climbs, were driving it. Now, other GC teams like UAE were assembling on the left-hand side. Alpecin are moving MVDP and Philipsen into good position in case there's splits as well.
Were you surprised while Jumbo was setting up their moves at the front, their train at the front, that we saw Wright working for Bauhaus and Skelmoser for Pedersen?
And Haig for Bauhaus too? No, not really. Skelmoser is so far on GC now that I think he wants to win a stage. I also think, where's he on GC? He got cooked on that.
Yeah.
He's on 8:47. He's 19.
Fighting for top 10.
Like,
from the break.
Yeah, he needs to go take 4 minutes in the breakaway and try and win the stage O'Connor style. So yeah, he can do some domestique work.
I was somewhat surprised to see Wright do the work for Bauhaus though, because in my head, Bauhaus was that sprinter that dropped on the tiniest hill in Tour of Slovenia, for example, last year. And he must have made some serious progress if they trust him more than Wright on a finish like this, is what I thought at that moment.
I mean, unless I don't see him in the finish results, so I think he got dropped pretty badly.
Okay.
And Nikias Arndt got lost time too. Nikias Arndt's usually actually pretty good on a finish like this. He's won not at tour level.
From the saddle.
Yeah, from the saddle. He's good at this sort of finish. So like a Jasper de Boister was pretty good here. So anyway, we'll talk about the Cavendish. We haven't mentioned that, have we?
No.
We'll talk about that after the stage in its own little segment. We go into these two Category 4 climbs. Jumbo have lined it out. They've put Benoit on the front. Van Baarle's dropped. He's been pulling all day. Pogacar's got Trentin. This is why I said it was so important Trentin came to this Tour de France, because Bjerg and Langen can't do this, what Trentin did today, which is trying to keep Pogacar in good position. And the first Category 4 climb, we see Wells with others gone. But on TV, it barely looks like a climb. Like, they're going 45, 48 kph. It's still a huge group. There really isn't people dropping except the biggest sprinters. Then there's a descent. Turgis has dropped on that first Category 4. He dropped De Klerk. Yep. He goes clear. Nice moto pace. I don't have a problem with it. Keeps the stage interesting. And then we don't see the problem is you've got this lame duck breakaway ahead.
Yeah.
And the cameras then focus 85% of the time on him. And also the motorbike between the two is moving in and out or not able to be in it. So we don't really see the fight. Like, I think Poggy, between the top of the second last climb mm-hmm. and the last Category 4, I think he moved up a lot of positions on the descent because he entered in decent enough position in the last Category 4. And Jumbo tried to line it out. The problem was, A, the climb, so with Van Hooydonk, they go full, Vingegaard's in his wheel, and Laporte and Van Aert is behind him. I think problem number one is that, if I remember, the Paris-Nice stage where they tried to split it, it was steeper, and also in Calais. B, Laporte or Benoit or someone took over after Van Hooydonk. Van Hooydonk pulled for a long time here, and after he's gone 25 seconds, he's no longer going to keep dropping people. So then Laporte took over, but it seemed to be too late. There needed to be that like snap acceleration, and I think Laporte needed to be in front of Vingegaard. And Vingegaard was also, I think, struggling because it's 5%. It's a big ring climb, and he's in second position, eating a lot of wind.
Exactly, and I feel like it also went wrong in a very important part to the climb where they do this kind of stuff. For example, it reminded me somewhat of what they did on Calais last year in the Tour, but the run into the climb is important, and I feel like that bridge was narrow, but it didn't line out the peloton in one line in the same way that Calais' corner before the climb did. So maybe that was an effect to why there was no gaps initially because of the acceleration and so forth, why the speed going into it was really high, higher than probably what they were hoping for. Anyway, that happens. Pogacar is moving up in the wind as this is happening. So he's getting into a position where he is competitive again, because like you said, he moved up before the climb, moved up on the climb as well. And then I saw fucking Groenewegen.
Yeah, Dylan Groenewegen was there, sitting in fifth wheel, sitting there easy.
I can't believe it.
And he didn't look like dropping. It wasn't like he was sliding either. He was holding fifth position.
Caleb Ewan Poggio style.
But that's what I mean. I think the Van Hooydonk one after 20 seconds, it wasn't hurting people like that enough anymore, to the point where you're going to actually drop him or create splits because it's not steep enough. You think you needed Laporte or Van Aert himself. And remember, in Paris, Van Aert pulled himself because Stibar was there. And so MVP's there, Pogacar's there. Eventually, the group over the top's quite big. Quite big, but also everyone's very tired.
Yeah.
And who has domestiques? It takes a while to get reorganized. Tergis has obviously been caught. We have 9Ks to the finish. Some of it's down, a fair bit of it's downhill, especially this descent here, a rolling plateau. There's a couple of counters, maybe Sir and Kra, I think, or another rider, or Campanas from Lotto Destiny counter. Laporte closes it down. GC Kuz goes to the front, tries to restore a modicum of control. Trentin gets Pogacar on his wheel, and the group's huge. We're going to have a sprint unless someone like MVP and Wout decide to jump away. And Van der Poel was clearly on Philipsen's duties because he didn't. Van der Poel could have attacked over the top of that Cat 4, and he would have got separation.
But Trek just had the numbers. They had five riders, if I recall correctly, moving up with Skelmos in first position, with, I think, Kirsch in third position, with Pedersen in last position, and they were moving up, setting control at the front. On the right side, we saw Albasen with three riders. Without Philipsen, Philipsen moved up a bit later towards that wheel of Van der Poel, and we basically saw that being the control for the next few kilometers. And I was thinking, if those two teams have a full train, Laporte is still there for Van Aert, we're going to have a good battle on that final hill, because these are the sprints we wanted to see sprint here. But Pogacar was also trying to keep himself in position, because I reckon he was trying to get bonus seconds.
Pogacar?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think he was too. And he took some risks. You know, he was fighting Van Aert for Philipsen's wheel, and Van Aert didn't yield it this time, and he leant on him, and it was on his left wrist as well. So, well, I mean, he really wanted those bonies. Yeah. So it's a risk, you know, for 4 seconds to, and because I don't think he's winning, especially from a group that big. You know, you need a group of 20 with no Philipsen, no Van Aert, and just like you against Alaphilippe to really have a chance with a Trentin lead out. And the group was huge. It was like 45 deep, 50 deep.
Exactly. And from that point onwards, we see the sprint trains going into the final stretch, into the final few corners. And we have a crash at this moment. I think it was somewhere which is 5.9 kilometers to go, roughly, where Yates and Landa were victims together with, I think, a Bora rider. I think it was 77 Poland. I'm not sure about it. And then Total Energy rider, Steph Cross, number 4 on his back. The arguably the best Belgian GC rider in front of Remco and Kian Uytebroeks. 13th in the Tour at the moment, 15th at the Tour. I have no clue. Anyway, he was laying there, and hopefully he's okay, because it actually didn't look too great.
He was banged up.
Let's hope he can continue the Tour de France. If not, let's hope he's in an okay situation. But yeah, it was sprinting time, eh?
It was. And yeah, Simon Felipe, he would lose 47 seconds. He did have a rider bring him back. Obviously, they're still going for Groenewegen in the sprint. I'd say, you know, he'd lose GC positions today. But yeah, we go into the sprint. Really weird camera work, where we got a backwards shot from basically 900 meters to go to 500, and really, really difficult to know who was taking control. I think it was actually Trentin moving up Pogacar. Pogacar was in good position. I'm just rewatching it now. It was Trentin. Alaphilippe was on his wheel. Mezgets was there. He moved up Groenewegen. He was there. And then Laporte jumps at like 450. 450 he moves and he starts his sprint. And I think Laporte, first of all, he's got Alpecin on his left-hand side. I thought the play would have been to close off Alpecin. Binny's also nowhere. He's out of position again. I thought the play would have been to close off Alpecin. And I think Van Aert didn't know which way Laporte was going to jump. And Laporte, he just went a little bit too early. And then because this is an uphill sprint, he is, quote unquote, only able to do his lead out until 300. So he's done 125 meter lead out, but 300 is a long way to go. And MVP jumps. And so there's Laporte's left a gap to the barrier for Van Aert to jump through. And there's obviously space to his open left-hand side. And Pedersen jumps to the barrier side before Van Aert. He beats Van Aert to that spot, to the right shoulder of Laporte. And MVP jumps to the left shoulder of Laporte. And both of them just jump before Van Aert. And then there's no space in front of Van Aert. And then Laporte is in the middle, sliding back. And basically, Van Aert has to stop completely. So it's just mistiming. The other two beat into a spot, and that's Van Aert's sprint over.
It's difficult, eh? Because if Laporte goes off the front at that point, when Pedersen launches, for example, you've got a very long sprint between Van Aert and Pedersen, and I'd argue that's going to be a close one, but I still believe that Pedersen would take that if that's from that early. So do you reckon that them waiting for the sprint where Van Aert would like to launch is what lost it for them?
I mean, the problem is Laporte just jumped too early, I think, you know?
Yeah.
He jumped too early. It didn't swing off. I don't think Van Aert knew which side, because Laporte had moved from the left to the right. And then, yeah, MVDP, you know, like he's struggled to sprint straight this week. And he sprints in front of, you know, he sprints diagonally in front of Laporte. Nothing really in it at all from what I can see. And launches Phillips. And, you know, he leaves just enough space for Pedersen and then swings off to the left. But yeah, Pedersen basically... How do you beat him on this sprint? And as you said, I'm not sure Van Aert does win this sprint, because Pedersen's launched at 300 in the wind. Say Van Aert does jump early. Okay, Van Aert jumps at 300. He's not going to get boxed in. But then he's got Pedersen on the wheel. And Pedersen beats Philipsen easily after Philipsen got a way better lead out than Pedersen. So Pedersen's just too good on these sort of sprints. He is so, so good with this like real 20 seconds. Like he's launched it. Like in this video at 50 seconds and he crosses the line, he sprinted for over 20 seconds full gas. And that's the difference between these and Phillips and the sprints he's won. He's not sprinting for 20, he's sprinting for 10, 12 seconds maximum when MVP gives him a flat lead out. So that's why I was so curious why they tried to get Pedersen the break today, because yeah, the best stage of him so far, and he duly does the business, Lidl Trek will be happy. They get it in the first week. A return on their investment, a Tour de France stage win. They'll be very, very happy with that. Beating Jasper Philipsen, who still, even second, you get a lot of green jersey points. Van Aert third, he came back very, very quickly and just pipped Groenewegen for third. Groenewegen, Echhoff, Cockard, De Boist. I don't know where Ewan went, because he was looking in okay position in the run-in. Tiller, Strong, Pogacar came 10th. He lost a few positions. And yeah, you're right. Bauhaus didn't make it, and Wright came 13th, but he already spent a lot of energy.
Exactly. Now, when it comes to every sprint we've had so far, we had a deviation police hat that we had to put on a few times around. Today, there was some rumor on social media that Van der Poel had elbowed Laporte out of the way, but that's just not fucking true. So
Laporte moves left into Van der Poel, and that's what I mean. Like, I don't think Wout knew which side Laporte was going to give him.
Yeah.
Or maybe he just thought it was too early. But if you hesitate with 300 to go,
mm-hmm.
and Laporte's decelerating, and other guys are just going to jump. And so you're kind of pot committed at that point. You have to jump if you're Van Aert. Otherwise, you get boxed. And even, you know, you might have been the fastest, you might have been the strongest. If you get boxed, it doesn't matter. Pedersen took his opportunity. It takes Cojones to jump with 300 uphill. And yeah, he was the best and he won.
Should Laporte have chosen a barrier side? Because usually when it comes to these leadouts, we see Van Poppel, for example, taking one side so that his sprinter is in his wheel, he's by the barrier so that he can go to the left and the sprinter can lodge between Van Poppel and the barrier.
I think he should have gone to the side he was already on and closed Alpecin. He should have sprinted to the left barrier as he looks at it, closed MVDP and Philipsen. Yeah, he was way ahead of them. And that's what Alpecin had been doing. And they would have been, it's what happened to Pedersen in the sprint yesterday.
Yeah.
Closed off, bang. So what MVDP did, there's no one. MVDP didn't endanger anybody, but everyone that's in the back left gets completely boxed in.
Yeah.
And then Wout jumps around Laporte and immediately goes in front of him, and then you cut off the draft to your back wheel as well. So that's another option. In hindsight, of course, they should have done that and Wout should have launched, but yeah.
Hey, learn from mistakes, eh?
Yeah, I mean, didn't they? They messed up last year, right? In stage 3 or 2.
Yeah, the Groenewegen one.
Yeah, where they didn't. I think Wout didn't know which side Laporte was going to go. Yeah, the Groenewegen one.
Yeah.
So they don't actually do a lot of leadouts for each other. Or Laporte actually hasn't this year, right?
I don't know, man. It's been a while since we had. Like, we didn't have Van Aert sprint at.
Van Aert didn't do Paris-Nice and he didn't do Dauphiné.
Yeah.
So this is like the first leadouts they've been doing. So, you know, it's, I presume they practice and talk about it, but, and Laporte is good, but.
They practice on Pro Cycling Manager.
Yeah, maybe. Groenewegen, very, very impressive today to beat guys like Cockard on this sort of finish and co. Anything else? Oh, we should probably say the green jersey, just to give an update on that, because there's Philipsen's now on 258 points. Cochard's on 149. And Mads Pedersen on 143. Van Aert on 112. So Van Aert's lost so many points on intermediates. Like, what's there been? Eight stages? Say he took 10 each stage. That's 80. So, you know, he'd be on near enough 200 if he'd... And he didn't even contest the sprint yesterday. So,
yeah,
it's... Philipsen's looking pretty unbeatable for green right now.
Yeah, Philipsen wins it, bar crashes and bad luck, I would say, from this point onwards.
Disqualification.
You might have noticed during that list, Mark Cavendish not anymore in the points classification because he ended up crashing out roughly 40 kilometers from the finish line, I think, 40, 50 kilometers from the finish line. A crash with multiple riders, but he was the one that ended up not finishing today's race. I think it looked like a collarbone. He jumped in the car pretty quickly afterwards, but he's not in the tour anymore, his final tour.
No, a bit of a nothing crash, just like nothing was on. And it's one of these crashes where I know this sounds a little bit harsh, but it's always curious to me. Maybe it's survivorship bias, but there's this nothing on in the stage. It's, you know, not a hectic moment. The GC teams aren't up the front fighting for position or anything. There's no crosswinds. And there's a crash at the back. And the rider that goes out is like, it's not a misc rider. It's like, maybe it's just because the crash has happened and when it is a misc rider, we wouldn't talk about it. But because like Train crashed again. I don't know why Uniwek still have him in the race. The guy's fractured his elbow. He's crashed again today. And they're posting on Twitter like, oh, we'll get him through. For what? He's young. He's like your GC future prospect. Like, what is he going to do in this sort of physical condition after two bad crashes? So I think they need to have a think about that. But yeah, Cavendish out. It's a shame because, you know, he recorded the fastest top speed yesterday, but top speed doesn't mean anything if you're not in good position. But his gear skipped. I went and rewatched the footage and, you know, he when he launches his sprint, he goes over a speed bump that he wasn't expecting. Yep. And whether that skipped his chain...
It looked like it to me.
I think that messed with his chain and people reliably informed me. So apparently two bike wheels just put together that's almost a meter in itself, over a meter. And so that means... It's almost impossible for a bike to be a meter or less. So
you're devastated.
Anyway.
But I'm more devastated about Cav leaving his final tour, to be honest.
Well, yeah, top speed, and he lost it. He lost it by 0.1 seconds yesterday or less. Like, he was, without that chain drop or gear issue, really close to winning a Tour de France stage. So must be super frustrating for him.
He obviously did the Giro. Maybe he still shows up at the Vuelta, you never know, but it's not really a Grand Tour where I usually see Cavendish fighting for sprints. I would love it if he just postpones his retirement one more year.
Well, someone's got to give him a contract.
Someone's going to give him a contract.
I mean, what
if Dainese gets a contract?
Dude, what are Ineos
doing? No offense.
What are Ineos doing? Like, they might
paying Viviani, my friend.
Yeah, paying Viviani to be Ganna's friend. Like, or to go to the Olympics. Like, wouldn't you... the problem is probably salary demands, but man, that the exposure for Ineos, if he wanted on there, and it's not like he's a scrub. He's like at a good level. Like he came sixth, fifth, and second with a gearing issue in the first three sprints.
Yeah.
He doesn't exactly have the best lead out in the world.
Should Tudor sign him?
Well, they have either decline. And where's Bennett going? Is he going to Human Powered Health or Tudor?
I don't know. I think Human Power and Health was rumored and then Tudor was rumored a week after. So at this point, I don't know where he's going.
I mean, maybe he just wants to retire. I mean, Cavendish has also crashed a lot. That San Remo crash when he was on Dimension Data was really bad. But yeah, it sucks for the race because he might have really won a stage. Like he really might have. Like Philipsen's not going to be in the best position every single sprint. At least I don't think so.
Champs was a lock.
Yeah, Champs-Élysées, he knows that. And so he's out. And now what are we starting to do? They're kind of without a... purpose.
Here's ball sprints incoming.
Yeah, it came 14th today, you know, it's not bad.
I don't know, it sucks.
It sucks. I do wonder, but it depends. Like, do I think it's possible he postpones his retirement? Yes, but that really is dependent on a team offering him not just a reasonable salary and a bonus if he wins the tour stage, but they also have to offer him going to the tour, which maybe Ineos don't. And also, they have to give him some sort of lead out. Otherwise, you're just going to waste a year. You could crash. You have frustrations. Yeah. And you could just rinse and repeat this again. But it depends. He loves the sport. Yeah. Sucks.
Cavendish, to quick step again. You were out of here first. No. He'll bring his own sponsors to do it anyway.
I mean, Fabio's gone. Fabio's gone, right? To DSM, apparently.
Lampert is rumored, but that's like he's a young talent. We don't know if he's going to be able to step up to the top league instantly. So
anyway, top team, maybe he just wants to retire. So
I've got one more story time. I told you about the story time yesterday, but I've got a huge announcement. For 2 years, I have lived in exile. I've been abandoned. I've been thrown away like dirt by the Astana social media managers on Twitter.
Oh,
I was
really?
Blocked because I tried to get an interview with Aramburu on this podcast. When I asked if he spoke enough English to get on the podcast, it was interpreted a bit wrongly and they didn't like me anymore. But I can tell you that with my insider spy, Alexander Vinokurov Jr., I finally found a way to get unleashed. I've been unblocked after 2 years. I'm actually shocked.
What are you going to do with this newfound power?
Has it influenced Cavendish's crash?
What that they've let you back into the fray. Your bad karma for them. That's entirely possible. It seems a bit of a coincidence, but yeah. I don't know. That's good for you. That's good for you. Let's see how long you last. I wouldn't tweet what you just said. Get yourself blocked pretty quickly, I think.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I'm terrified already.
Tomorrow's stage 9, the last stage before the first rest day on Monday, which we're all looking forward to. This has been a jam-packed first week of cycling, or the Tour de France, from Saint-Lenard-de-Noblat to Puy-de-Dôme. They haven't used this finish since, I don't know, Bahamontes in the 50s or something, or maybe it was more recent than that. They did some big numbies. I reckon they were on all sorts of stuff. Like because they were using like 10 kg bikes, and you see the climbing times they did in the 50s on Puy-de-Dôme. It's mental. Like,
what do you reckon they were on?
Is he alive to sue me?
I don't know.
Can the state sue me? I mean, it wasn't even illegal then, was it?
I don't know.
Dude, he's still alive. He's 94. I'm not going to say it then. I respect for him. But yeah, they did some quick times up Puy-de-Dôme back in the day. anyway, rolly stage. This is going to be hot. West of Clermont-Ferrand, basically in the middle of smack bang in the middle of France, just going west over this rolling up and down terrain. It's not high altitude. It's sort of midi mountains, 500 meters, 700 meters high. But the climbing isn't. It's like 5K's 4%, 2K's 5%. But they're the categorized climbs. There's not actually much flat in this, actually. And the first intermediate sprint's actually at the end of 5K's 4%. I think Pedersen and Trek need to form a breakaway and try and take back 23 points on Philipsen tomorrow. It's a really good opportunity to do so. And also they should be trying to have Pedersen as a tug buddy for Ciccone or Schelmoser in the breakaway.
Remember the stage where Vanderpool was in the break and we didn't figure out why he was in the break?
He didn't even sprint for the IS.
Vanderpool said that Philipsen was supposed to be in the break, but they failed to do so. And that's why he was just playing around that stage in the break. So maybe they'll try it again.
Still didn't sprint at the IS to take away IS points.
Okay, good.
You can just drop back from the break, save energy.
I agree. But tomorrow, I don't necessarily see Philipsen not responding to Pedersen if he tries to go in the breakaway.
5K's 4% in the first 23Ks, and there's hilly before then. I think it'll be tough for him.
And also the thing is, like, Philipsen has such a major difference that he's destined to win more sprint stages in this tour.
Yeah.
So if that continues, then he has no need for these sprints, and he might need to think about recovering and making sure he reaches Paris as well.
Yeah, and Pedersen's not looked that good in the pure bunch sprints.
Yep.
His leadout's not there. Sturven and Kirsch were good today. Anyway, the medium mountains last for about 150 kilometers. Then they descend into Clermont-Ferrand, which is where Rémi Cavagna is from, and I think Bardet lives there, according to Luke. And they do the Puy-de-Dôme afterwards, 12.6K, 7.8%. It's an all-category climb, and it's a fake news climb. This is the prototypical fake news climb. The first 4 kilometers are 7.5%. Then the fifth kilometer is 5%. Then two false flat kilometers, which will basically feel flat to the riders at 2%. Then 5.5%, the 8K. And then a ramp, basically, a long wall of, 4.5 kilometers at 11.5%, 4Ks at 12%. With some pinches in there, the road circles around the dome. I think we're going to get some amazing helicopter shots tomorrow. It only goes up to 1,400 meters, so not high altitude. But there's over 3,000 meters elevation gain across the stage, and it's going to be mid-30s, I think, again. This is a very, very difficult climb. This is more difficult than Marie Blanc, Benji, which saw huge GC gaps on Wednesday.
Exactly, and the suffering beforehand will influence it as well. My question going into our discussion here is who will control the stage, because Jumbo, after what happened on the final mountain stage, on the Tourmalet stage, will they be willing to risk pacing in the stage, risking bonus seconds to Pogacar, having the ability that Pogacar might get closer if he counters them again? While UAE might think, okay, we didn't look that good at Mont Blanc. If we spend so much energy here and get dropped, then it also won't do well. But then again, the bonus seconds are there. So I see more likeliness that UAE tries to control the breakaway than Jumbo does. But I also don't have complete confidence that any of them will.
I smell a UAE going for the stage win again.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be confident after the Tourmalet stage.
Mm-hmm.
On Planche de Belfi, which is a very similar duration. So the steep section will take them about 15 minutes, 16 yeah. minutes maybe. The overall climb over 30 minutes. But if you just take the, you know, Planche de Belfi, they went for it. They really invested a lot for Pogacar to win that stage. And I think they're going to try and, yeah, they'll want a small break to go. And if they get a small break, they'll control it. And then they'll try set their tempo on the climb and take... use Yates and Micah to take Pogacar as deep as possible into this climb and try and go for the win with an uphill sprint or whatever. So they'll be buoyed by, I think, Thursday. But this is a very hard climb. This is not La Planche de Belfi. This is like 15 minutes at over 11%. That's really, really steep. Now, for KOM as well, you know, this is where the GC guys start to take a lot of points back. For example, Pogacar's on 19, Vingegaard's on 18, Hindley's on 19. Paulus ain't going to take any points unless the breakaway makes it.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever wins out of, say, Pogacar, Hindley, and Vingegaard would be the top three favorites in the GC group, will take 20 points. So unless he gets in the break, already the GC guys are going to be taking maybe going into the polka dot jersey tomorrow. So, but do you think the break has a chance, Benji? Because if you're... Thibaut Pinot? Where is he on GC?
He's on enough time.
Yeah. Pinot's on 7.5 minutes. Manuel's on 15 minutes. So Pinot, he needs to go on the breakaway.
Gull.
Yeah, Gull would be very good for this because Hindley's like third GC favorite.
Yeah.
And Gull went with him for a lot of time on the Tourmalet stage. Oh no, on the Marie Blanc stage. Yeah, Gull has to go on the breakaway.
I want to ask Ineos. Kindly. Rodriguez is obviously fighting for the podium, but he does need his entire team surrounding him.
They were at the front today when, like, in second position with the whole team lined out with 150Ks left. I was like, guys, what are you doing?
Yeah. Bernal lost time to get away with Jakobsen, and he dropped in today's stage. Why would Bernal not go in the break? I'd love that. Bernal in the breakaway is my only wish for this entire Tour de France.
And Pidcock's in the top 10 on GC. He's on 4:43, yep. Just hiding. He's having a good GC. Kuss is still there in 10th. Let's go. Should Jumbo put Kuss in the break?
You like it, huh?
If you want to make it annoying for UAE, you put Kuss in the break or Kelderman.
And then UAE responds with putting Adam Yates with Kuss, and then Jumbo needs to respond with Vingegaard in the break and Pogacar in the break.
Yeah.
For UAE has responded, we've got a nice breakaway.
Adam Yates ain't getting in no breakaway. Yeah, I want Clément Berthe in there, Dylan Turns. I'm just looking at people that are super skinny because you need to be a pocket guy to
Woods?
Pump it. Yeah, Woods. Where's he on? He's lost all the time now. This is the thing.
32nd? Woods, 28 minutes?
Woods fought for GC. And except for this stage, we had all these stages which suited him from the break, like
LeBlanc.
Marie Blanc. And then he just collapses on GC and he's lost the opportunity to go in those stages.
Yep.
So yeah, Woods will obviously must try and get in the breakaway tomorrow. He'll be very good. Juanpe, I expect there. And as I already said, Clément Berthe plus Felix Gull is a very, very difficult combination to go past. And I'm going to go with Gull from the breakaway, actually, because as you said, Benji, maybe there is a little bit, maybe UAE are scared of Marie Blanc and Jumbo Visma are scared of what happened on Carteret, and you get basically the breakaway winning and... I think Felix Gull is, and Hindley is not going to be in there. So I think Felix Gull. What about Martinez in the brow? I think if Martinez is in there, Gull should be in there. And Gull is just better than him. So
yep.
I agree with you. Bernal, they should let him in the break.
I agree. What is the rider that I said initially would be in the breakaway? I completely forgot already. Bernal. I don't see Bernal winning the stage, though. I would wish he does, but I don't see it happening. Pinot, I'm kind of like, I'm waiting for that 14th of July stage. I don't remember what it is, but that seemed like a breakaway opportunity. And
Grand Colombier's 14th. Yeah, that would be every French climber win the break that day.
Thibaut Pinot wins Grand Colombier, but not this stage.
Too hard for Johannessen from the break. I don't think he has the pure climbing.
I also, it's not too hard. It depends on who's in the breakaway. Like,
if I'm Bora, I put Buchmann in the break.
Okay.
I would put Buchmann in the break if I'm Bora.
I'm just going to wing it. Pogacar from the GC group.
Okay. I mean, yeah, like, I think he'll be the favorite for the stage because I think UAE will, you know, they're usually aggressive on stages like this. If they think they have a chance of a stage, I mean, look at the risks he was taking to sprint today.
Yep.
And tomorrow is, you know, an uphill, a proper uphill finish. So, yeah, I think he'll go for it. But in terms of GC, yeah, Simon Yates loses two positions. Rodriguez and Adam Yates leapfrog him into fourth and fifth. I think a lot of teams, and Luke Rowe even said this on What's Occurring, Ineos, Jayco, and Groupama will be really regretting what happened on that Marie Blanc stage.
Yep.
Not just because Ineos particularly, Ineos pulled Hindley away from the peloton with Fraile going into a 4K 10.5% climb thinking Martinez had a chance, and Hindley just fucking smoked him because Hindley literally came third on the Dauphiné Queen stage and is a serious GC rider, and that gave him what? On Rodriguez, like 90 seconds, I think. So they're going to have to make that up. Otherwise, Rodriguez would be sitting, yeah, unless Hindley dropped him, much, much closer. So I think Jayco, Ineos, and Groupama would be thinking, I wish we'd maybe chased a little bit when UAE didn't care.
I fully agree, because the podium battle is kind of now a battle for fourth right now, unless we see Hindley having some vulnerable moment throughout the next couple of weeks. Now, one more thing. I spoke about potentially Pogacar winning the stage. Vingegaard obviously has a chance as well. It's very difficult for me to predict, based on this final, what's going to happen, because Marie Blanc looks like last 4 kilometers of Puy de Dôme. So on paper, you'd say, oh, Vingegaard will drop Pogacar here based on Marie Blanc. But on the other hand, I also didn't expect Vingegaard to drop the day after from Pogacar, who looks fucking strong after Tourmalet. So I'll be honest, I've got no clue who will drop who. But I do feel like there's going to be a gap between the two.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to really come to the line in a sprint. It's not like Planche de Belfie. Planche de Belfie was 22 minutes, I think. And the first 18 minutes was like 5.5 watts per kilo and pretty not chill, but it was a big group. And then the last 4 minutes, Micah did a big lead out, pulled off, Poggy surged. And then the last 4 minutes were absolutely full gas because it's steeper, the last K of Super Planche de Belfie it was last year. This is different. There are going to be big GC gaps between... Unless Pogacar and Vingegaard completely suppress.
Yeah.
And let, because Hindley should be good on this.
Yeah.
Hindley should be really good on this finish. It's like Fedaya. It's like Marie Blanc. It's a 15 to 20 minute, very steep effort, and he's lightweight. Rodriguez also. So, and Yates, I don't know how much that crash affected Simon today. So it's difficult to see the two big guns not going clear, but yeah, I also don't think it'll be a sprint. It's too hard. It's not like Blanche de Belfie.
It's not like Grand Colombier.
If Vingegaard does his best numbers like he did on Marie Blanc, he drops Pogacar. But, he, you know, on Col Thorey, he got dropped. So we'll see. We'll see if he can repeat the Marie Blanc performance. Otherwise, Poggy might be, you know, taking another 20 seconds plus some bonies.
You know what I hope? That after tomorrow's stage, they're both within 2 seconds of each other in GC.
Well, that would be the case, right? That would be, Poggy taking 18 and 4 or something. 18, And he's 25 seconds back now. Then we go into the first rest day, basically on a deadlock.
That'd be great.
Yeah, going into the second week, going into a deadlock. So big GC day tomorrow. Maybe the breakaway has a chance too if a team doesn't want to control 168Ks of hot and heavy. Hot and heavy, Jesus. We're doing a cycling podcast here of hot and up and down parkour. But yeah, we'll be back with the big ramp test tomorrow. Historical finish. Hope you enjoyed the podcast and we'll see you with a recap then. Ciao.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.